But it's basically what is our reaction or attitude to the new Corbyn party. At the beginning of July, an unknown MP, Sara Sultana, resigned from the Labour Party and crossed the floor of the House of Commons to join Jeremy Corbyn and his group of four pro-Palestine. Is that funny sound stops it? Anyway, what I was saying is that you know Sara Sultana, a Labour MP, she resigned and joined Corbyn's group of independents in the House of Commons. At the same time, she announced that she and Corbyn were planning to launch a new political party, a Left of Labour political party. Then, at the end of July, two of them issued a joint tweet, or both tweeted at the same time, to say that the party was now being officially launched and inviting people who were interested to register their names. Within a month or so, apparently some 750,000 to 800,000 people had expressed an interest. So whatever we might think of what the policies of this party are going to be, this is surely a phenomenon, a significant political event, which we must we've got to say something about and even take an attitude. At the moment, the new party has no name other than Your Party, or I suppose we should call it Their Party. It's got no constitution and it's got no policy. These apparently are all to be decided at a founding conference sometime in the autumn. It could be October, could be November. Let's look at these three issues. First, the name. I mean, Your Party is only temporary. I mean, Sultana herself has favoured the name of The Left, I suppose after the Die Linke in Germany. But nothing has... Who's making these funny noises? But so anyway, I doubt if it'll be calling itself a party. It might be like some of the trade unions calling themselves Progress or Advance or Community. It certainly won't be called Collective, which of course is the present name for Corbyn's inner circle because of its associations with the Borg in Star Trek. I doubt if it'll include the word socialist, but anyway, at least let's hope that's the case because it won't be socialist. The second problem they've got, second thing they must decide is the constitution. And here there's a choice. Sultana apparently has put forward the idea of one member, one vote over the internet, which has been called Zoomocracy, but the idea favoured by most people, including Corbyn himself, I think, is it should be some sort of federation of local activist groups. I mean, still be a national party, still be delegates, but they would come from local activist groups. I mean, the third possibility, it's a remote possibility. It should be like the Labour Party. It should be have individual members and trade union affiliations. I mean, this is the line or position that's put by the people behind Tusk, but I don't think it's got any chance of happening. If only because no trade union, I don't think, will affiliate to the new party. What about policy? Well, in the tweet at the end of July, announcing that the party was going to be started to be launched. This is what they said. We refer to the party, not to Corbyn and Sultana. We will only fix the crises of our society with a mass redistribution of wealth and power. That means taxing the very richest in our society. That means an NHS free from privatization and bringing energy, water, rail and mail into public ownership. That means investing in a massive council house building program. That means standing up to fossil fuel giants, putting profits before our planet. If you analyse that, in fact, it's not all that different. In fact, it's slightly less radical than what the Labour Party was advocating in the 1970s, when it also was promising a massive and irreversible shifting of redistribution of wealth and power in favour of the working class. So it looks as if it's going to be, as far as policy is concerned, an updated version of what the Labour Party used to be like 50 years ago. They're also, some of those who signed up have been organising meetings up and down the country. I'm not quite sure how they got hold of the list of people, of the 800,000 people. But anyway, these meetings have been taking place. I think some members might have been to one or two of them, and I've been following stuff on the internet. Here's a description of what was discussed at one meeting, which was held in Lewisham in South London. It'll give you an idea of what sort of policy this party is going to end up advocating. Anyway, this is what the person who attended it reported. In the group, they had a meeting, and then they split up into groups and then reported back. Anyway, he says, in the group I attended, as in all the others, participants were asked to state policies, both national and local, that your party ought to prioritise. In my group, I suspect in all the others, the main ones were tax the rich, defend and expand the NHS, reinstate proper funding for education and other services, including those run by local councils, and renationalise all formerly publicly owned institutions. Anti-protest measures must be ended, and we must mount opposition to the racist measures proposed against asylum seekers, and of course, oppose Israel's attacks on Gaza. He went on, perhaps unsurprisingly, there were also proposed policies that could easily be adopted by pro-establishment parties, not least taking genuine action to halt climate change, but also adopting better measures to end pollution, stop speeding on the roads, and defend safe spaces. So I think I think that will be a fair assessment of what the sort of people who signed up want and what they will be advocating, and what, if it's a democratic organisation, will emerge as the policy of the new party, whatever it's going to be called. So we can rule out one thing: they're not going to be standing for socialism, not even full-scale state capitalism, as in the old Clause 4 of the Labour Party. They're going to advocate, capitalism more or less as it is. If you notice that in the original statement, they only talk about bringing back into state ownership public utilities, which of course will leave the bulk of industry in the hands of private capitalist corporations. So I mean, they're going to be advocating, that's going to be the basis. They're going to be advocating all these things within there: redistributing wealth, spending more money on the NHS, and so on. So it's going to be classic reformist. So what are the chances of the party succeeding? By succeeding, I mean becoming, at least in England, the sixth political party, national political party, after Tory, Labour, Liberal, Greens, and Reform, and not just as a flash in the pan, but as a permanent feature of the British political scene. Although I said that the party won't have socialism at its aim, there are some, apparently, a group of people who want to join it and try to make it have socialism as its aim. I mean, I would say, good luck to them. But anyway, I'll come back to that later. So, what are the chances of success? Well, let's have a look at, briefly, all the various breakaways from the Labour Party over time. I mean, the first one, of course, was the Independent Labour Party in 1932. And when it went off into the wilderness, it only had a few MPs elected. And after the war, most of them defected to Labour. And finally, in 1975, it wound itself up and reaffiliated to the Labour Party. Then in 1995, after the Labour Party had dropped Clause 4, Scargill formed his party, the Socialist Labour Party. I mean, he saved his deposit in a couple of by-elections, but they never got anywhere. Then we come to the 2001 general elections, which is when the Labour Party was unpopular. Various Trotskyist groups got together and formed the Socialist Alliance. I mean, they stood 98 candidates in that election, but once again they got nowhere, and the various groups fell out with each other, and the thing collapsed and disappeared. Then we come to 2005, which this is a more serious split or new breakaway. The Respect Party with George Galloway, who did succeed in beating the Labour into winning a seat. But of course, the mass basis of this party wasn't left of Labour people, but Muslims. But that eventually split because of the various Trotsky groups that had joined it, fell out, or rather, he booted them out, or booted some of them out. Then you had, for the 2010 general election, you had left Unity, which is originally proposed by Ken Loach. Once again, the same sort of people as a presumably flocking towards this new party. Well, didn't exactly flock towards this one, but enough of them joined to keep it going. And then, but I think it might still exist on paper, but it doesn't do anything. Then again, we've got Galloway coming back with the Workers' Party in 2019, and then winning a by-election. Now, all these failed. I mean, the one that was most successful, in a sense, was one which had a nationally known figure as the leader. We're talking about George Galloway. He's not a very sympathetic person, but his party and the SLP, in terms of policy, were more like reincarnations of the old Communist Party. But I mean, they suffered from two problems. All these breakaways, say Centrist Alliance, you left Unity and so on. They didn't have, except as I mentioned, the respect, but they didn't have any mass basis for support. And of course, there was the various Trotskyist groups which fell out with each other, infiltrated it and tried to take it over. Now, so if you go by past experience, the chances of this party taking off are not all that bright. But there's one big difference. I mean, I mentioned this national name recognition. I mean, Galloway was known even today. When Galloway's party, the Workers' Party, is standing against the Trotskyist Tusk people, even if they've got no organisation on the ground, they always get more votes because people, because of national recognition. And of course, the one asset that this new party has in that terms is Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, he was much more prominent and more known than Galloway. He was, after all, the leader of the Labour Party for 5 years, and was always in the news. That's one advantage that they do have. But we'll have to see if that's enough advantage. It's obviously been enough to attract 750,000 people, but will it be enough to attract more votes in elections? Now, the other problems that this new party is going to face are, well, I suppose you can call them institutional. The first one is the first past the post system, election system, which exists in Britain. I mean, this encourages tactical voting, and you can only break through on this if you have if your supporters are concentrated in particular areas. Now, like the original Respect Party, this party will have that, but will have that basis, because the four pro-Palestine Muslims who elected as independents and who sit with Corbyn, I mean, they've said they're going to join this new party, so you'll have that base there, and they'll probably be able to topple one or two other Labour MPs at some election, including some members of the of the cabinet. But I mean, and then of course you've got the Green Party. You can't have two parties. I mean, the Green Party just elected a snake oil salesman as their leader, who claims to be a socialist, but is definitely out to try and get the votes of disaffected Labour supporters. So the two will, to a certain extent, be competing. As I said, whatever they say, you know, I imagine that in many cases they will reach some sort of an agreement to divide up council seats anyway. But when it comes to the general election, I will be interested to see what happens. I don't think the Green Party, which has spent 20 or 30 years building up local support, is going to give way all that easy. In other words, in any negotiations between the new party and the Greens, the Greens will have the upper hand. So I mentioned local authorities. I think here the party might be able to make some ground, but this isn't new. There've always been, you know, breakaways, you know, from the Labour Party at local council level, and of course, obviously, independent Labour and so on. So these groups could, you know, provide a local basis in some areas. Though here again, if you're elected as some sort of independent representative of a particular region, you might not want to fight elections under the name of some national policy with national policies that you might not agree with or you might not find particularly relevant. I mean, proportional representation could be a way out, and there is, in fact, proportional representation, one form of proportional representation for the Welsh Assemblies and the Scottish Parliament. I mean, there's elections next May there, and we'll see what happens, how many people, you know, given a chance to vote for this new party, and say there'll be one of seven rather than one of six parties, established national parties or regional parties. People will be able to vote for them without having to vote tactically for somebody else, and we'll see what happens. Now, the other problem is going to be factionalism. The various Trotskyist groups are already preparing to infiltrate.
Oh, where's he gone?
Adam.
We've lost you, Adam.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
My computer is, my laptop keeps well, anyway, that's kind of, I was saying that the problem is going to be the infiltration by these, you know, by these Trotskyist groups. In fact, what the problem has been quite well stated by the general secretary of the old Communist Party, the people that run the Morning Star. You know, this is what he's written. The experience of previous electoral initiatives on the left posed two other problems that will have to be confronted. Firstly, the readiness of ultra-leftist sects to infiltrate broad-based movements in order to divide them, pose as a left opposition to the leadership, and recruit from those they can influence and mislead. I think that will be a very real problem. On the other hand, you could say that how many of them will it be? How many Trotskyists all together and others like them, Maoists and people? I mean, there can't be more than 5,000, which of course is a drop in the ocean compared with the 800,000 or so people who said they will join. But these people are quite dedicated. They see themselves as professional revolutionaries. They have to pay 10% of their wages, or one week's pay or 1 month's pay. So they're quite clever at infiltrating and doing this sort of thing. That's what the particular ones are doing. I mean, one of them I've already mentioned. It's the SPEW and their front organisation, TUSC, which is the Trade Union and Socialist Coalition. I think. You won't see the Trade Union and Socialist Coalition again. I mean, that won't be contesting any more elections, which will be a good thing. You know, a good thing because they misuse the word socialist. But they're still plugging, as I said before, this idea of a Labour Party Mark II. It would have individual members and trade union affiliations. They favour this sort of thing. They will try to influence, I think, mainly through their members who are on trade union executive committees. Now, the SWP, I mean, they brought out a new pamphlet on this, which I've ordered. It didn't arrive in time, but according to other reports, what they want to do is to get their members nominated for local councils and even for parliament, but not as members of their party, as members of one of their front organisations, like Stop the War. It seems to be the same tactic as well from their various breakaways, Counterfire, and RS21, who've got some local councillors and so on. So they'll be undercover if you like. I'm not sure. I'm fairly certain that this new party will not allow dual membership. Anyway, this is going to be one of the problems, as well as the first past the post system, the existence of the Green Party as rivals. I mentioned earlier that there seem to be a few people who stand for socialism as we would recognise it. For instance, the Communist Future people that contested the general election purely on a program of communism, defined in the same way as we define socialism. Now, I'd like to read you, it can only take a couple of minutes, a statement by one of them. This is Nick Rack of an organization called Talking About Socialism. This is what he posted on their website on the 29th of August. Capitalism will only be abolished by the conscious act of the working class, the overwhelming majority of the world's population. It won't be achieved by small groups or parties or by prominent individuals. It requires the majority working class collectively to understand the need for the present system to be overturned, abolished, and that this task is its to carry out. It requires millions upon millions to become committed advocates and advocates for change, prepared to carry through that change. To achieve this, we need to build a mass socialist party committed to this aim. We need to persuade people of the need for this step and that this step requires them to carry it out. Your party is in the process of being set up. There are lots of discussions taking place about what it should be for. Socialist communists should argue that it should be for the abolition of the present system, capitalism, not for the creation and for the creation of a new one, socialism, communism. For me, as for Marx and Engels, these two words mean the same thing: a society based on the democratic ownership of the resources of society. I do not mean what exists in the Soviet Union and similar states, or what exists currently in China or North Korea. These have nothing to do with socialism, communism. The majority working class in power would transform society, democratizing every aspect of it, from the abolition of the monarchy through to the expropriation of the private capitalist owners of the means of production and their vast accumulated wealth. This would be a fundamental break with the old capitalist system and the basis for a new, classless, stateless society to be created. We need more material arguing in favor of socialism. Why would it be better? How would things be differently done? We need to convince others that the new socialist society is worth them putting in their effort, time, energy, and money. This system is rotten. Socialism would transform the lives of billions across the globe now and for future generations. We should argue for your party to clearly state that socialism is its aim. Those of us who agree on this should find a way to work together to achieve this. So I don't think there's many more of them than any one of our in one of our branches. So they've decided to enter the new party and to try to argue the case for socialism. Now, I mean, you can see why they might be tempted to do this, but they put themselves in an unprincipled, even dishonest, position. Because if they're a member of this party, you'll be expected, when election comes round, to to give out leaflets and tell other people to vote for it. But if you don't, you lose your audience and the people that they're trying to influence. I mean, In the 1930s and 1940s, there were people who urged that we should do this in the Labour Party. We should join the Labour Party. Well, some of us should join the Labour Party and argue the case for socialism there. I believe we did have a councillor somewhere in Essex who did agree with us on everything except being in the Labour Party as a councillor. I think obviously our attitude is, yes, these people are obviously thinking about what to do about capitalism and how to move forward. We've obviously got to be there, but from outside, as it happens, all over the country now, almost every week somewhere, there is a meeting of these people who signed up. I don't know who's organized these meetings, different people in different parts of the, in different parts of the country. But, I mean, they've been having attendances of 80 to 100. So, I mean, we should be there with leaflets outside to try and give to them, maybe to go in and see what they're up to. I mean, I'm going to go to one in Wimbledon on Wednesday. I think two other members of London Branch are going to go to one in Brixton on Friday. I think Howard here has been to one in Swansea. I think now, before the actual party is formed, this would be the best time to leave for these. But I think we should do something. I mean, if people want, I mean, as the central organizer, can find out where these meetings are taking place and pass them on to branches to follow up. Okay, that's the opening of the discussion.